welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, we hear the story The Embassy on Dimension X from 1950. But right now, a broadcast of Exploring Tomorrow, hosted by sci-fi editor and writer John Campbell Jr., known as a legendary sci-fi editor, working with Astounding Science Fiction magazine for decades. And in an oral history film by Eric Solstein and Gregory Musnick, they pooled together sci-fi authors to talk about Campbell and his work and writing style. In the film, on the subject of Campbell's editing, sci-fi author Barry Malzberg said, "I think Campbell's contribution is peerless. His contribution to the culture through the medium of science fiction was unduplicable. And I think as a practicing editor, in his ability to procure and shape work and the progenitors of that work, no one was this good. I think he was undeniably a great editor. I think the span of his greatness is short. He was a great editor from 1937, from his ascension to the editorship of Astounding Magazine, which was in October of 37, until the publication of the May 1950 issue of Astounding with L. Ron Hubbard's article on Dianetics." Science fiction author Frederick Pohl said of Campbell that he had his basic philosophy or principle for Astounding Science Fiction. He said he wanted to publish stories that could be published in a magazine of the 25th century as contemporary literature, which is to say you took all the gadgets and the inventions and so on for granted, and you wrote about what the world was like after these things happened. To that end, author Hal Clement, who was part of the stable of writers for Astounding Science Fiction under Campbell's stewardship, said of the early days at the magazine that the stories up until then tended to devote a great deal of their time to explaining how the rocket ships and ray guns worked. John pointed out firmly, since he was the one who wrote the checks, that, wait a minute, if you are writing a detective story, you don't waste wordage explaining how the detective's car or automatic work. You take it for granted. I want a story which could have been written in the 25th century, which was a very good thing for most of us. We did have this tendency to stop and explain why our peculiar scientific ideas were, after all, feasible. Keep that in mind as you enjoy this next broadcast of Country Boy on Exploring Tomorrow, a story taken right from Astounding Magazine, broadcast in 1958.
Exploring Tomorrow.
And now, here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, John Campbell.
The 2 o'clock jet from Montana has just landed at New York, bringing in some 200 passengers, including some who have come to the world's largest city for the first time. Roy Bartlett is one of these. Big strapping kid out to seek fame and or fortune. And New York was ready for him. The ancient custom of fleecing the country yokel will not die out for quite a few centuries to come. He just emerged from the port terminal and was looking around, big-eyed and confused and bewildered by the immensity of it all, when a girl came up to him.
Hello there. Waiting for someone?
You speak to me, miss?
That's who I was talking to, handsome. I asked you, are you waiting for someone?
No. That is... I mean, I just got here, miss. I came in from Montana on the jet plane there.
Oh. You got friends here? Oh,
I'm afraid I don't, miss. I just sort of decided to up and come to the city and sort of try my luck at it.
Well, maybe I can help you. I sort of like you.
You do?
Mm-hmm. You know, something in me wants to help strangers, to show them the ropes. And I've got free time now. I'd like to... Well, spend it with you.
Oh, you're so kind, eh? So pretty.
You think so?
Oh, yes. You're the prettiest girl I've ever seen. Your smile, your eyes, you're good. I can tell you're warm and sweet. It's good of you to come to talk to me like this, to stand so close to me.
Well, I think I like you, too. What did you say your name was?
I didn't. I mean, it's Bartlett, Roy Bartlett.
Well, I'm Diana Lawson. Mm. You're big. Strong out there. Handsome.
Well, does it always happen this way?
Suppose we stop in for a bite to eat at that refresher man and get to know each other, huh?
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Well, see how it works, Troy? Each drink you want, you put a half-credit coin in the slot and punch out the combination.
Mm-hmm.
For a martini, you punch out 436, like it says on the board up there. Here, give me the money. I'll get us some drinks.
All right.
436.
Mm.
There we are. Two nice dry martinis. Here, you take yours and we'll go to that table. Oh, careful, Silly. Don't spill it.
Well, aren't we going to get anything to eat?
Oh, we can eat later. The occasion calls for a drink to celebrate your arrival. Here you are. And sip it this time.
Well, I'm sorry if I did the wrong thing with the drink. I just didn't know, you know.
Of course you didn't know. But you learn all these things, Roy. Where are you from? Why are you here?
Well, I worked all my life on my father's farm, and he died last year and left me all alone out there, Steve.
Oh.
I kept things going a while and then figured I ought to try something different. I sold the farm and I bought a ticket to New York. A one-way ticket.
Oh, it must seem like a different world to you.
Oh, it does. Big and frightening, unfriendly. At least it seemed unfriendly at first, till I met you, Diane. I can't ever thank you enough for coming over to me when I was alone.
You don't need to thank me, Roy. Just common decency to help a stranger out. Especially when he's a good-looking stranger. When are you seeing the central computer?
The what?
The central computer.
Huh?
Well, it runs New York, you know. Keeps the trains moving, the traffic lights, everything. You have to register with a computer when you establish permanent residence here. If you don't have a job, the computer will give you one. You mean you didn't know that?
I guess I hadn't heard. Well, where'd I find this computer?
Just ask any policeman. He'll get you there.
Diana, you're swell for helping me out like this. I mean, I wish... Well, there's some way I could thank you for this.
Oh, I told you, it's just common decency. Roy, the money from the sale of your farm, did you bring it with you?
You bet. Yes, sir. $5,000 in cash and the same in traveler's check.
Oh, so much. You're carrying it around with you?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, that's dangerous, Roy. You'd better put it in the bank right away.
Well, I don't know any bank.
Oh, I'll take you to one. Come on. Unless you want another drink before we go.
No, I haven't finished this one yet. Here, wait a minute. those things taste better after you've had a few, you know?
Now, come along. I'll take you to the bank and then to the computer.
Oh, it's wonderful of you to take this interest in me. They warned me New Yorkers were unfriendly people, but they sure aren't.
Down this way. In here.
But it's dark in this... Hey!
Go ahead, Mike. Hit him!
Get away from me, you... Leave me alone,
please. Diana! Come back! Diana! You are Roy Bartlett, age 25, height 6 feet 2 inches, weight 185 pounds, born in Helena, Montana, 17 February 2184. Parents deceased. If any of this information is incorrect, please amend it.
That's all correct, sir.
Use of honorific titles is not necessary when addressing us. According to the report of the police officer who found you, you were beaten and robbed shortly after your arrival in New York.
That's right. She said she wanted to help me to show me the ropes in New York.
Identify more specifically the she to whom you refer.
She gave her name as Diana Lawson.
Describe her.
Oh, she's a medium height, 5'4 or so, and blonde hair. Good looking. Cute face, though the eyes are a little hard now that I think about it. She looks about 23 or so.
Our record banks hold no information on someone of that name fitting the description you give. The name was obviously assumed. Your introduction to New York life was unfortunate, but not uncommon. Do you plan to remain here as a permanent citizen?
Yes, yes.
What are your vocational plans?
I'm afraid I don't have any.
Your previous experience is wholly agricultural. This will be of little use to you in the metropolitan area. Have you any preference for the type of work you would like to do? This would guide us in assigning you.
I'd like to help people, if you know what I mean. I'd like to keep people from having the thing happen that happened to me. I mean, New York is full of confused, unhappy people who have to prey on others like the girl did on me.
You regard her as confused, unhappy?
Of course. I can't think of her as being just, well, wicked. People aren't born bad or good. They're raised that way. Maybe she could have been helped a few years ago, and then she wouldn't have to go around robbing strangers.
You harbor no hatred for the girl.
I sort of never looked at it as hatred, sir. I mean, I'm sorry, sir. I can't help calling you, sir.
If it makes you more comfortable, you may.
Thanks, sir. Well, as I was saying, no, I don't hate that girl, Diana. I'd help her if I could.
She is a warped criminal.
But is that permanent, sir? Can't she be brought in and straightened out somehow?
There is psychological rehabilitation for criminals, yes.
Well, you mean if she could only be caught and brought in, she could be turned into a useful citizen?
If she could be found in a city this large, it is not always possible to track criminals.
Well, I'd like to try to find her, sir. I mean, that's my vocational plans. I'd like to become a policeman, sir.
You will have to face psychological testing first, of course, and a training period of 6 months. But let us warn you, Roy Bartlett, if your motive in this is one of revenge, you will not survive the first battery of tests.
Revenge? Oh, no, not revenge, sir. I want to help that girl and the others like her. Honest, that's what I want to do.
This will be demonstrated in the tests.
Do you think I'll make the grade, sir?
The tests will answer that.
But I mean, you computers can figure probabilities. Can't you tell me if...
You are most unusual, Roy Bartlett. But the probability favors your success. You will be taken to the testing center immediately. And if you are approved, you will go to the training camp.
Oh, thanks, sir. Thanks for listening to me. Will you wish me good luck?
Our data banks do not show the validity of such a wish, Roy Bartlett. But if your statements today were sincere, you should have no difficulty attaining your goal. The robot will show you to the testing center.
A computer can talk about revenge. That's a word that can be put in its vocabulary. But it couldn't understand what revenge meant. It couldn't understand human feelings of any kind. For that, human beings are necessary. For that, Roy had to be passed along to human beings who could teach him, could understand him, could help him understand himself, and find what his life work should be.
Mind if I sit down here, miss? You seem to be alone.
I am alone. Glad to have some company. Sit down, stranger.
Thanks. Thanks very much. You waiting for someone?
Yeah, I was. I don't think he's going to show up. You must know how that sort of thing is. When someone you're counting on doesn't show.
Yeah. Yes, I know what that's like, Diana. And I've been looking for you almost a year.
You know my name. Who are you?
You mean you've forgotten me, Diana? I suppose you would have. The pitiful greenhorn you picked up last March?
You. The Montana fella.
That's right. Roy Bartlett. You taught me how to drink a martini, remember, in this very place. And then you taught me what it was like to be robbed by someone you trusted.
I'm getting out of here. You can't keep me here.
You'll leave when I want you to leave, Diana, not before. Sit still. Don't make a fuss.
Let go of my arm. You're hurting me.
You just sit and try to look relaxed. Don't attract attention.
You can't prove anything. Leave me alone or I'll call a cop.
Go ahead, Diana. Call one. Now, look.
That badge. Oh, no.
That's right. I found a job in a big city, Diana. 6 months of training and the breaking in period. I don't happen to be wearing my uniform now, but the badge is real.
What are you going to do with me?
Take you away, Diana, to Psych Center, where they can help you straighten up and grow the way God meant you to. You know, girl, you really did help me, and it really was worth the $5,000 you took from me. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and you showed me how to get the kind of job I wanted.
What are you talking about?
You never done any farming, have you, Diana? Probably don't realize what a farmer's job is. Well, it's making things grow. Grow strong and right the way they were meant to. But I guess I'd got sort of tired of working just with plants.
No, no, no. They'll kill me. They'll make me into something I hate and something that'll hate me. It won't be me. I'll be a zombie or something.
I suppose it does seem that way. You never tried it the other way, though, have you? Without hate and bitterness driving you.
You mean tried being dead? No, I haven't.
No, I mean stop running and start doing what you want for yourself instead of what you think you want to do to somebody else. Now, look. We need Mike, too, your accomplice. He's outside, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's walk out together. Act natural. That's right. Just walk along with me as if I'm a rube you picked up when you're taking me down the block to that dark alleyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's Mike? Is he right behind us?
He ought to be. Mike, get him, he's a cop!
That stun gun blast ought to keep him on ice for a couple of hours. Long enough to get him down to headquarters, anyway.
I hate you. Why does this have to happen? Why couldn't you left me alone?
I wanted to help you.
Help me. By turning me in like this, behind me over at the head shrinker.
They'll heal you, Diane. Take all the bitter hatred out of your mind. Make you a useful citizen.
Who wants to be a useful citizen? I had a good thing here until you busted it up. Now they'll fix me so I'll have to go straight, be a good girl. Sew buttons on shirts for 30 credits a week.
There are good jobs open for rehabilitated criminals. Nobody will hold your past against you.
Good job. I'll never be able to go near my old friends. I'll have to begin life all over as somebody new.
That's right. And I'll be there to help you start all over.
You?
Sure. I'll be there to help you. I told you I owe you that. Come along now. Let's go down to headquarters.
To work with material things. And some can't see beyond it. When they can't see beyond material things, they're like Diane. Some people like to work with information, bits of data. Accountants, lawyers, many people work with data and information. So do computers. But some go beyond that and they want to work with human beings. Now, some lawyers are not merely information handlers. They're human handlers. I guess Roy was one of those who wanted to go beyond the material and even the low living things. He wanted to work with humans. You see, Diane did do him a favor.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from the Mutual Broadcasting System from 1958. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Now, in this host's opinion, one of the more disturbing broadcasts of Dimension X from NBC, heard on June 3rd, 1950, it's Donald Wolheim's story, The Embassy.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense.
Dimension X.
Out of the infinitude of stars and planets in the solar system and other systems in the universe, it is almost mathematically certain that there exist other forms of life on other worlds. Someday in the future, in 1,000 years, or in the next 10 minutes, daring travelers through space will make contact with the inhabitants of another world. But the question is, will we contact them first, or will they contact us?
Come in.
This is Broderick's private detective agency.
Check.
My name is Grafius. Grafius of Springfield. I would like to see you, Mr. Broderick.
Check.
What is it, Dolan?
There's a guy outside.
What kind of a guy?
Oh, a great big guy with a big shining head and thick glasses like the bottoms of Coca-Cola bottles. And he looks like a professor or
something. What I mean is, does he look like a client or a bill collector?
He didn't say.
Okay, Iron Man, send him in.
Check. Mr. Grafius, Mr. Broderick will see you.
Thank you. Mr. Broderick. In the flesh. Okay, Iron Man, step outside.
Check. If you need me, I'll be outside.
You'll have to excuse Mr. Dolan. He's a very useful man if you happen to want a house moved or somebody's head unscrewed from their shoulders. His reflexes aren't too good. He's what you might call underorganized.
I suspected as much.
All right, Mr. Grafius, let's get down to business.
Precisely. I would like your assistance in helping me locate something here in New York City.
Just what are you trying to locate, Mr. Grafius?
The Martian Embassy.
Would you say that again very slowly?
I came to New York to locate the Martian Embassy.
Martian? Like in Buck Rogers?
Precisely. Agents of the government of the planet of Mars.
Dolan!
What's the trouble, boss?
Throw him out. He's a crackpot.
Of course, if you wish me to leave, I will leave. But before I go, you might examine this. You'll find it quite authentic.
Holy mackerel. A 5th century note.
Let me see that. Sit down, Mr. Grafius. Sit down. Make yourself comfortable. Dolan, get Mr. Grafius a light.
Check.
Okay, Mr. Grafius. Your remarks about our speckled friends, the Martians, I shall ignore. This being the year 1955, I assume you were joking.
On the contrary, I'm completely serious. As it happens, I'm interested only in Martians at the moment.
I see. Okay, shoot.
It occurred to me in the course of my studies that we Earth people cannot possibly be the only intelligent form of life in the universe. Out of the infinitude of stars and planets, there must definitely, mathematically, be others. Since Mars is older geologically, and since it is also an atmospheric planet, its evolutionary history could easily be similar to ours, you follow me?
Well, so far, I can't say no.
But if this is true, then they must have been watching us, observing us, for hundreds, possibly thousands of years.
What for, blackmail?
Shut up, Dolan.
They know, then, that we are not far from achieving space travel. Atomic rocket ships that can travel to other planets. They also know we're a militaristic, warlike race. We might conceivably set out to conquer and occupy Mars one day.
In which case, they'd try to get the jump on it.
Precisely, Mr. Broderick.
And how would they do that?
For a civilization as old as theirs, space travel would be a simple enough matter.
Flying saucers. I've read about
it. Relax, Iron Man. Go on, Mr. Grafius.
If you were planning to attack an unknown nation, what would be your first move, Mr. Broderick?
Intelligence. Find out what the odds are.
You have a very logical mind, sir. You would send agents to scout the nerve centers of earthly civilization and advancement. Not in Kansas City or Equatorial Africa, my dear sir, but here in New York City. The most technically advanced spot on Earth.
Uh-huh. And, you want me to help you prove this theory of yours?
Precisely. Expense does not interest me.
Well, this may take a very long, long time, Mr. Graffius. After all, nobody's ever seen a Martian.
I assure you, they will be very ordinary appearing people. Very likely they live together in downtown New York, close to the newspapers and publishers, the news cables, communication centers, and the financial center of Wall Street. Most certainly, they live in a private house with no servants to pry into their affairs.
Some ordinary people who live in a private house in downtown New York.
Yes.
I might just as well look up Martians in the classified section of the phone book.
There is one other lead which might help you.
What's that?
They would be almost certain to subscribe to every conceivable type of newspaper, scientific journal, foreign language publication.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might be something. Okay, Mr. Graffius. It's a deal.
Excellent. I shall contact you tomorrow.
Before you leave.
Yes?
Just as a matter of interest. Why are you so interested in meeting up with these Martians?
Mr. Broderick, I wish to avert the catastrophe of a successful Martian invasion of the Earth. Naturally. I cannot go to the police or the military. I'd be laughed out of existence. So I'm doing this privately.
You seem to know all the answers, Mr. Graffius.
Not all of them, Mr. Broderick. Not quite all the answers. Not quite yet.
Here's a private address. Takes everything from Pick Magazine to the Manchester Guardian. Listen to this. Pick, Look, Scientific America, the Daily News, the Daily Worker, the Police Gazette, the Journal of Engineering, Scientific Quarterly, American Psychiatric Journal.
Let me see that. Oh, Doolin. Doolin, sometimes I wonder. What's the address on this?
9 West 124th Street.
Which happens to be the Harlem branch of the public library.
Oh.
Now listen, noodle brain. Check all the renting agents. Find out every private house in downtown New York. And then cross-check with the magazine subscription departments of the scientific magazines. You got that?
Check.
I wonder.
Boss, what's the sense of all this? We know there ain't no Martian embassy in New York.
This crackpot is paying us $100 a day, and we got to keep him happy. You understand?
Yeah.
Also, I've got a hunch that Mr. Graffius isn't looking for any Martian embassies. He's looking for something quite different. I'll start making with a telephone. Which house is it, Doolin?
Right down there. Number 108.
Did you find out anything?
Not a thing. I've been watching the place for a week now. Nobody comes out. Nobody goes in. I asked around. Nobody knows nothing.
You ain't been blabbing around the neighborhood that we're looking for the Martian embassy, have you?
Boss, I'm stupid. But I ain't that stupid.
Who'd you talk to?
I struck up what you might call a casual acquaintanceship with those two girls standing with the baby carriages up the street. The cute one is real cute.
Now, look, Doolin. Don't try to do anything intelligent. Just keep walking up and down. See?
Check.
I'm going back to the office to meet Graffius.
See you later, boss. Hiya, beautiful.
Hiya, Flatfoot.
How did you know I was a detective?
Your socks are bagging at the arches.
Well, stick around, beautiful. I'll be back in a few minutes, and we can make some beautiful music together.
Listen to Romeo, Helen.
The name is Doolin, honey. Iron Man Doolin.
Your line is getting rusty, Iron Man.
What do you want to fool around with him for?
He reminds me of my husband. He's a big, good-natured slob. Helen. Helen, look. Oh, hey, Dolan! Dolan, look out! Look out! Helen?
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Grafius.
Not at all.
Doolin found a house down in Greenwich Village, privately rented. Number 108 Conklin Street. Nobody seems to know anything about who lives there, except that they subscribe to every paper and scientific journal put out. And also, they have a peculiar antenna on the roof.
You don't suppose your Mr. Doolin will try to get inside the house?
No, he knows better.
Mr. Broderick, I assure you, if that place is the Martian embassy...
Doolin can take care of himself.
Still, I wish you had informed me before.
Well, that's probably him reporting back now. Excuse me. Hello. Yeah, speaking. Doolin? Yeah, he works. What? Oh, no. No, I can't think of any. Yeah, sure, okay. Yeah, I'll be right down. Okay, Lieutenant. Yeah, right away.
Something the matter?
Doolin is dead, Mr. Grafius.
What?
They found him splattered all over the sidewalk in front of number 108 Conklin Street.
How did it happen?
There were some witnesses. They said a building cornice dropped on him.
The cornice? But how?
It fell off the building next to 108, right on top of him. Come on, we can get a cab. I have to identify the body. I'm Broderick.
Oh, well, there's your boy, Broderick. Not very pretty.
Oh, mother in heaven.
That's a 1,000-pound hunk of concrete.
Where did it come from?
Dropped off the roof of 106.
Anybody see it?
Yes, a couple of maids pushing baby carriages. One was so shaken, we had to send her to the hospital. The other one is hysterical, but she can talk. Can't seem to get any sense out of her, though.
Do you mind if I talk to her?
Not at all.
I'll be back in a minute, Grafius.
I'll wait here.
She's standing right over there with the patrolman on the beat. Oh, Hanson.
Yes, sir?
This guy wants a few questions with the girl.
Please, I told you what I saw. How many times I got to tell you?
Yes, the dead man was a personal friend of mine. Would you tell me what happened, please?
Helen and I were standing in front of Rathman's candy store up on the corner. We both had the babies up. I worked for Mrs. Gillian on Washington Square North. He said hello and joked a little. Then he walked down the street just like he's been doing all week. Hadn't taken more than a few steps. What?
Please, miss. Oh, it's very important.
I tell him, but they don't believe me.
What do you tell them?
How it happened.
Tell me.
It's too awful.
Please.
Well, first he squashed. And then the stone fell on it.
What do you mean, he squashed?
They don't believe me, but Helen saw it, too.
She saw what?
First, he squashed. Then it fell on him. He was mashed flat before it even hit him.
Now, look,
that's the story, Broderick.
Please let me alone. Let me go home. I told you what I saw. Now, let me alone. Let me alone.
Did you learn anything, Mr. Broderick?
Huh? I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. It's crazy.
Mr. Broderick, if I may make a suggestion at this point, perhaps it would be better if we dropped the entire matter.
What's eating you? First you come at me with a chain of nonsense that you're staking real cash on, and now when we hit solid trail, you want to call off the dogs. Well, maybe you operate that way, but Broderick doesn't.
May I ask, then, what do you intend doing?
As soon as the cops clear out and this place quiets down... I'm going to pay a personal call on the Martian embassy. Whatever number 108 is. Whatever you are, open that door. Two heads or 10 fingers. I'll drill you like a platoon of rookies.
Yes?
Oh.
Well, young man.
Excuse me, ma'am. Is the lady of the house at home?
I'm the lady of the house.
Well, my name is Broderick. I represent the Manhattan Child Adoption Center. We're soliciting funds and clothing for stranded and unadopted children. I wondered...
Oh, won't you come inside?
Well, we don't usually...
Oh, nonsense. I'm old enough to be your grandmother. Besides, my son, Lauren, is working at home.
Your son?
He's a bibliographer. He writes summaries of articles and books from scientific journals and publications for libraries and universities.
I see.
Well, sit down, Mr. Broderick. We get so few calls, and I do like to visit.
Oh, thank you.
Now, what was it you wanted to talk to us about?
Oh, well, I wondered if you or your son... There's nobody else living here.
No, just Lauren and I. I'll have to ask him about the contribution, but I'm sure he'd like to.
Good. Thank you very much. I'll send a representative to collect...
Oh, please, stay a moment. I was just about to have tea. Let me pour you a cup.
Well, no, thanks, really.
No, young man, I insist.
Well, thank you.
I'm getting awfully tired of having tea by myself every afternoon.
You know, I'm not very much of a tea drinker, but this seems to have a strange taste.
It's my own recipe. The secret is in the brewing.
It's sweet. Yet almost metallic.
It takes a few sips to get used to, like olives.
Uh-huh. Well, I think I'd better be running along.
Oh, but you haven't finished your tea, Mr. Broderick.
I better be going. I'm late.
Oh, you're not being very polite. Do finish your tea.
No, really, I feel funny.
Oh, I'll call Lauren.
No, I'm leaving. I'm dizzy.
Oh, I'm sure Lauren can help you. I'll call him.
Oh, no, don't bother.
But I must. Besides, you aren't well.
Gee.
Lauren!
Get out.
Lauren, hurry.
Got us out of my way.
No, you must stay.
Hey, Mother.
You struck my teeth. Let go of my arm.
Lauren!
Let go! Get out of here.
What heaven?
The other one. That Broderick. He was here. I drugged his tea.
He got away. Fool, idiot.
Go after him. Use the pressure ray.
Risk another murder on our doorstep. Are you insane?
But he suspects.
We'll have to take our chances. We'll have to think of some other way.
How did they find us?
I don't know how, but I'm certain someone else sent them.
Who?
I don't know. I'm afraid to let myself think. It might be them.
Please, I...
Get away from me.
Stay awake, me.
Look out.
Miss, please.
Let go of me. Help.
Please.
Help, officer.
You don't understand.
What's the trouble here?
This drunkard is insulting people. I saw him come out of that house there.
108?
That's the one. He bumped into a gentleman, and then he pulled at my arm.
All right, miss. I'll take care of him. Come along, mister. I'm going to give you a break and take you back to the wife and kids.
No, you can't. I'm sick.
Sick, is it? What's the matter?
Drugged. They drugged me.
Who drugged you?
Number 108. Martians.
Who?
Martians. Number 108. It's a Martian embassy.
Well, I've seen them with pink elephants, rabbits, and mice, but you're the first one who's got marks.
That's true, I tell you.
Uh-huh. Come along.
Now, listen. Don't take me back there. Don't
come
kill
on.
Me. Look, I gotta make you understand.
Here, I'll help you up the steps.
Please, my name is Broderick. I'm a private dick.
We'll find out about this. Here, don't try anything.
Officer, please listen. I'll give you anything. I'll give you $1,000. Please listen. For God's sake, listen. Listen.
Yes, officer. What? Broderick.
You know this lush granny?
Why, that's my son, Broderick.
No. Martian.
He's in pretty bad shape. You better get him to bed.
Oh, dear. He was doing so well at the Alcoholic Society. He must have gotten off again.
Looks like he's ready to pass out.
Lauren!
What is it, Mother? Oh.
Your brother, Broderick, has been drinking again.
Look out, he's passed out.
I'll take care of him, officer. We've handled this sort of thing before.
Can you manage okay?
We'll be fine, thank you.
You've been very kind, officer.
Oh, nothing at all, Granny. I know how it is with these alkies. Well, I'll be seeing you.
Mr. Broderick is regaining consciousness, Mother.
What happened? Get up.
Do not struggle, Mr. Broderick. It'll be impossible for you to rise from that chair. The pressure from this ray will keep you there.
Ray? What? Who are you?
You've already guessed, Mr. Broderick.
You mean this really is the...
Martian Embassy, yes. You have the honor to be the first prisoner of the Imperial Government of Mars.
First prisoner?
Yes. After the invasion, of course, you will all be our prisoners.
Hey, look. What sort of a business is this?
No business, Mr. Broderick. As your people will soon find out, our preparations for invasion are nearly completed now. As soon as we give the signal, our armed forces will launch a surprise attack. And then the Earth will be ours.
You're crazy.
Not half as mad as you, Mr. Broderick, to come muddling so foolishly into our affairs. That was a fatal mistake.
So, Doolan's death was no accident, then?
Assuredly not. We found it necessary to use a pressure ray on your friend. The block of concrete was an afterthought. We thought it might help to avert suspicion.
All right. What happens now?
If you cooperate, you can look forward to a quick, painless death like your friend, Mr. Doolan.
If not?
This pressure ray has many delicate adjustments. It can move a pin, or it can crush a boulder. Let me demonstrate. You see, Mr. Broderick, as if an invisible vice were crushing you.
What do you want?
The name of your client. We are interested in knowing who is so anxious to locate the Martian embassy.
The names of my clients are confidential.
Well?
All right.
Turn it off, Mother. Mr. Broderick has seen the wisdom of speech.
His name is Graphius.
Graphius?
Yeah.
An unusual name for an Earthman.
Describe him.
Well, I don't... No, if I really can.
Mother.
Oh.
Describe him.
He's tall. He's got a big forehead. And about 60. He wears thick glasses. He's bald.
Lauren, sounds like one of them.
Yes, it does. Contact the planet. Tell them we suspect that our plans are known. Ask for an acceleration of invasion day.
At once.
What about me?
I am sorry, Mr. Broderick, but I am afraid you know too much now. In exactly 5 seconds, you will feel the full impact of the ray which faces you. I would suggest that you relax and meet your fate calmly.
Now, wait a minute.
You will feel no pain, just a wall of force engulfing you.
Listen, I...
Five.
No, you can't do this.
Four.
It isn't human.
I know, but we are not human. Three.
Yeah, but...
Two.
No!
One.
Mother in heaven.
Now.
Lauren.
It didn't work.
Something's happened. The magnetic field is dead.
Get it working. We've got to get rid of this one.
Now, listen. Listen,
you... Be quiet. I can't understand what's gone wrong with the ray. Why would it suddenly stop like that?
Perhaps I can explain.
What?
Graphius! It's you!
Yes.
Lauren!
Stand back from the pressure ray, please. It will not function anyway. I have decontrolled your field.
Lauren, it's one of them. They found us.
Did you think we wouldn't? I trust you have not harmed my friend, Mr. Broderick. He's been very useful to me.
Brother, am I very glad to see you. Talk about the Marines landing in the nick of time.
You're free to move now, Mr. Broderick.
I don't know how you got in here, Graphius, but stick around. These babies are really Martians, just like you said. They're planning to invade the Earth and take over.
There will be no Martian invasion.
If you keep these characters covered, I'll get the police.
There will be no need for the police. I intend to handle them myself.
Yeah, but the police will...
Do not call the police.
Why not?
You fool of an Earthling. Don't you realize with whom you are dealing? The invasion of Earth by Mars will be like child's play compared...
Lauren!
Holy mackerel. They just flattened out.
Like your friend, Mr. Doolan. I detest the use of violence where the intellect can rule. But unfortunately, the Martians are a threat to us. It must be destroyed.
I believe you now. Another 5 seconds, they'd have finished me. I'm glad you didn't waste any time.
There is little time to waste. The Martian invasion was to have taken place next week.
Yeah, I... Hey. They never said that. How do you know?
You would not comprehend.
Wait a minute. There are some things here I do understand. A second ago, that pressure ray didn't work. Now you're using it like it was a toy.
How did you get in here anyway? Who are you? Another one of those Martians?
No, Mr. Broderick. I happen to be a Venusian.
What?
A representative of the planet Venus.
Venus? Why, that's impossible.
Not at all. The Martians are really an inferior race. We Venusians are much farther advanced. As much as we are over you, Mr. Broderick, the Martians would simply have conquered and enslaved your people. We Venusians felt compelled to exterminate you completely.
That's impossible.
Oh, no. Now that we have disposed of the Martian threat, what is there to stop us? Our invasion begins tomorrow at noon. By nightfall, the Earth will be ours.
Mother in heaven. Either I'm completely cuckoo or... Oh, all this is really on the level.
You needn't edge toward the door, Mr. Broderick. You're thinking of running for help, aren't you now? I can read your thoughts quite clearly.
Suppose you're going to knock me off like our Martian friends.
On the contrary, go ahead.
Leave?
Why not? Why don't you try it, Mr. Broderick?
Because the minute I turn my back, you're going to let me have it.
Suppose you try it and see. I have no interest in stopping you.
Go ahead. All right, Buster, you asked for it.
It will do you no good. No good, you'll see.
Here,
why do you think you're running, Tom?
The officer, listen to me.
Oh, it's you, the one with the mask.
Yeah, that's right. Now, listen. That story is true. They're inside that house, inside number 108. He killed them.
Who killed them?
Raffius. He's the leader of the Venusian invasion.
Venusian invasion?
That's right. Tomorrow at noon, they're going to take over the Earth. Now, listen. Go in that house.
Martians, now Venusians, eh? Okay, that's enough for me.
Come along. Good. We haven't got much time. Hey, wait. Where are you taking me?
Bellevue Psychiatric Ward, my friend. Come
on. Bellevue, no!
No, come along.
No! Why don't you listen to me? Why are you such a fool? Let go of me!
You're lonely as a bedbug. Come
on! No! I tell you, there's going to be an invasion. The Venusians are going to invade it. Don't you understand? You got to believe me. You got to believe me.
All right. I believe you.
Oh, why don't they listen? Why don't they believe me?
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of... Dimension X.
Next week, the story of Riesling, the strange blind singer of the spaceways. He traveled the space lines from Mars to Venus to the moons of Jupiter. No captain could refuse to carry Riesling and his battered guitar. He sang of all the wonders of the galaxy, but his greatest song was of the sight he would never see, the green hills of Earth.
Tonight, Dimension X has presented The Embassy, a story by Donald A. Wolheim, as adapted for radio by George Leffert. Joseph Julian was heard as Broderick, Barry Kroger as Graffius. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman, engineer Don Abbott. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King. Tomorrow, hear High Adventure. Now it's Truth or Consequences on NBC.
Dimension X, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 3rd, 1950 on NBC.
And that wraps up this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back.